Hello, thank you for tuning in. Today we'll be talking about electronic aids to daily living. My name's Brian Burkhart. I'm a clinical rehabilitation engineer at the McGuire VA in Richmond, Virginia. So most of my experience is with the VA, but I've tried to structure and talk about things in this presentation more broadly, so it's not just focused on VA clinicians. But there's really a lot of information to cover, and this is kind of intended as an overview and to give someone who's not familiar with electronic aids to daily living a good jumping off point to dive deeper. So again, I'm Brian Burkhart. There's my contact information. So I have no conflicts of interest with any of the things I've mentioned in this presentation. I want to start with just some definitions or semantics. Some of these might seem basic, but I'll use a lot of these terms interchangeably throughout the presentation. So electronic aids to daily living, I'm not going to say that mouthful every time, EADL. ECU is a little bit older term for that, environmental control unit. And both of those are kind of synonymous with smart home in the context of this presentation, which is also synonymous with home automation. We'll also talk a little bit about mobile devices and smartphones and tablets. Those are kind of the same, again, in the context of this conversation. We will talk a little bit about AACs, and then I'll use patient, user, consumer. Of course, AT is a pretty basic one. And if you are wondering what the square root of that big number was, it's 543. So what are our objectives? I'd like for you to be able to identify one characteristic of an appropriate user for mobile devices using EADLs. Be able to list a couple components of EADL systems, and to be able to understand some of the costs associated with using assistive technology solutions for EADLs versus consumer solutions. So like I mentioned in the beginning, this is kind of like drinking from a fire hose. There's a lot of things covered. There are many simple solutions. They just don't fit everyone. And there's lots of options, and because everything is changing, you know, we're talking about technology, you know, cell phones come out every year with variations. We're definitely working with a moving target here, so this represents kind of a snapshot, especially of some of the specific examples of what's available today. So what are we going to cover? We'll do a little bit of an overview of just what EADLs are, kind of in that context, talk about who, what, where. Related to EADLs, talk a little bit about the evaluation process, and this isn't like a formulaic evaluation process. It's more of kind of just things to think about. Go over a bunch of examples of different products that are out there, and then there's some quick reference guides as well that should be available. So EADLs basically provide some method for users who can't access their environment in traditional methods to access their environment. So that is typically things like the television or lights or fans, thermostats, telephones, hospital beds. I mean, the list goes on and on. But you can kind of sum it up by things that are electronic or mechanical. So this is kind of a diagram of what are all the components in an ECU system. And this is kind of an oversimplification, but you have the user, which really is the center of this system. And there's an interface that then interacts with this kind of the electronic portion of the EADL. And then it has to communicate with all these things that the user wants to control. So we'll talk about each one of those components. Just as this is a common slide to show, especially in AT presentations, but I really like it. It's from Cook and Polger, but it's the HAT model, and I think it really applies well to EADLs because you're not just giving someone a device or an app. You really have to think about what this person wants, where are they going to use it, how are they going to use it, to find the right solution. So talking about the patient or the user, so again, it's anyone who needs kind of an alternative access to things that you would use in your daily life. And really, the television is a big one as far as popularity or requests. And it really boils down to, in my opinion, quality of life. So you give someone who, maybe someone who has a spinal cord injury, the ability to control their TV or their lights or a fan, and that independence can really change how they feel and increase their quality of life. But it doesn't just affect the user, it also affects caregivers. So if you, as a caregiver, you don't have to come in every couple minutes to change a channel or move the hospital bed, that really takes a burden off of you so that you can focus on, you know, other things. So when you're, you know, the patient, focusing on the patient, you know, physical ability is one of the first things you're going to look at, as far as, you know, what can they do, really determines their access method. And I like to start simple, like even if it's just a switch, and not even bring the EADL into the picture, but can they access a switch, or do they need something different? Cognitive ability plays into that, especially how complex or simple the interface to the EADL needs to be. Their mental status, so if they get frustrated really quickly, that really, you know, you don't want to pick something that's going to break down a bunch or be difficult to use. I mean, then their home environment certainly determines different types of systems you would want to use, especially when it comes to like a home environment or a long-term care facility. So kind of focusing more on the environment, I kind of think of single room or multi-room, especially when we're talking about the home. And if it's a single room, you've got to think of things like, well, how does this EADL system need to be mounted? It's certainly simpler insulation if you're just doing a single room, but that's not that typical. Normally, it's someone using these systems in multiple rooms of their house. So then you kind of have to think about, you know, how is it going to be mobile? Is it going to be on their wheelchair, or is it going to be different base stations in different rooms? And certainly access method and the type of system you choose dictates a lot of your options in these areas. So continuing on, in a hospital, it's a little bit different. So we typically will do a temporary insulation if we're, a lot of times it's if someone's just here for a week or so, a couple weeks. And we keep those installations really simple. So maybe you're just doing TV and a nurse call. But it's really important if you are installing something like this in a hospital that you educate the caregiver staff, the nursing staff, so that they are able to fix things when they break or reposition things. And definitely, if it's in a hospital, it needs to be durable, because definitely the hospital can be a rough environment. It's a little bit different if you're doing a long-term installation, like in a long-term care facility. Then you might do more than just a hospital bed, or more than just a TV and a nurse call. You might incorporate other things like the bed or lights or fans. And again, we kind of covered the home area, but definitely in the home, it's ideal if you can go out and do a home visit. At the VA where I work, we don't or aren't able to do home visits, so we do a lot of questions to try to nail down what a patient wants and what their home environment is like. I mean, sometimes we actually have vendors go out, which really is the best, getting that home visit or a vendor going out. So kind of jumping into the interface, so how does this person interact with their EADL? And I've broken this down by access methods, and these are common access methods for all assistive technology, but direct access is the best. If your patient can directly control what they want to access, that's going to be the quickest and the most efficient. So things like keyboards, mouses, touch screens, joysticks, chin controls, those are all really great. Voice control is very popular. When it's voice control can get tricky, because there's totally hands-free voice control, and then there's switch-initiated voice control, and there's different types of voice control with menu structures and complexity levels. You certainly have to think about someone's voice amplitude and can they maintain a good voice all day long? So maybe a patient with ALS has a good voice in the morning and weak voice in the afternoon. You have to think about that. And so whenever I do voice control, I like to have a backup access method, which is typically switch access. So indirect access methods, so scanning, it's certainly a great access method, but sometimes it's a hard sell to patients. And it's basically when the most simple way to do it is one switch. You press the switch, that starts scanning through options. You press the switch again, and that actually selects your option. So it's not the most efficient, but people who use it regularly can get really fast, especially guys who use it or patients that use it when they're young. There's also double switch, which doesn't do auto scanning. It allows you to increment. Some people like that, but it can be more require more energy because you're hitting a button much more often. And then there's other types of things like directed scanning that more complex EADL systems have that can kind of increase or decrease the amount of time to get to certain areas of the screen. And there actually, I don't know if this exists anymore, but there were some systems that would allow you to use Morse code as an access method, which is pretty cool, and apparently it was really fast. I've never seen it in person, though. So moving to the actual EADL, like the hardware itself, they can be mobile or they can be stationary. Certainly mobile is nice if you're using it on a wheelchair or you're using it in multi-rooms, but stationary systems can be used that way too, typically with some sort of wireless access. But they can be battery-powered or just powered off the wall. I really like it when they have a battery backup in case the power goes out. An example of why that's important is if the power goes out, the EEC and the EADL is still running because it has battery, and then you have a battery backup door opener, then the patient could open the door and get out of the house if they needed to. But different systems have different mounting requirements. Most of the time it's something you can just set on like a bedside table, but if you're putting it on a wheelchair, then there are different ways to mount them. And mounting could be a whole discussion or presentation all on its own. So now we've covered the patient, the interface, the control unit. So how is this control unit talking to all these devices? So there's lots of different ways. Infrared is common IR. That's what your TV remote typically uses. The important thing to know about this is it's line of sight. You're shooting light to the receiver of the television to activate it. So if someone stands in the way, that could make it not work. But it is very common and it's easy to use. There's also different radio frequency type communication for things like little remotes that turn on and off lights or garage door openers. It's not line of sight, which is nice. Now, those are both simple things. When we start talking about more whole house control or home automation, there's a whole slew of other communication methods, and I won't dive into all of this, but the old stuff used to be power line based, and it would communicate to different things through your actual power wiring in your house. That's still used, especially by some of the assistive technology EADL systems, but more common home automation systems are using your Wi-Fi, or they're using Z-Wave or Bluetooth, different wireless communication standards, and certainly consumer devices are using that. It's very common these days. So the evaluation process, I really like this cartoon just because it can kind of show that sometimes doing something simple like wiping a napkin on your mustache, if you can't directly do it, can become very complicated. So I kind of feel that, so one of the other things I do in my position is do power wheelchair evaluations with therapists, and I kind of feel like EADLs are similar to that because you're dealing with a complex system with lots of different things pulling you in different directions, and there's lots of pros and cons. And they're both very expensive, or can be very expensive. I really think collaboration is important. Both, of course, the patient is the center, but having caregivers or family members involved is really important. And as a rehab engineer, I really love having clinical staff like OTs present and part of it. That's not always possible, but the more viewpoints often, especially with complex access cases, it really is beneficial. But you know, the basic evaluation for us typically consists of a few sessions, maybe an hour each. It could be longer the more complex it is, but you know, the first thing is determining what the patient wants to do. What do they want to control? And then based or in conjunction with that, what are their abilities? And determining the access methods based on those abilities. So normally we'll do an initial session, could be 1 or 2 hours, and it really depends on the person how long it takes. I mean, sometimes we go longer, but it really, I think it's too much after that. But I like to, you know, after finding out what the patient wants and what their abilities are, I like to demonstrate access methods, and I like to demonstrate different EADL systems to them based upon that initial conversation. And then once I've demonstrated, then the patient can kind of decide, well, I want to try to actually use a couple systems. And so if we can do that in the first session, great. If not, we'll have follow-on sessions. And so then they can actually try these systems. And again, this can be kind of hard if you don't have access to everything. Fortunately, we have a pretty good library to try with patients, but especially with voice control, I think that that's really important. If possible, especially when we have inpatients in the hospital, or maybe we have multiple outpatient sessions to, if they're not an inpatient, to do a more long-term trial, so to really let the person use a system or use an access method to see if they really like it, because a lot of times these systems are expensive, and you don't want to have an abandonment problem. But once you kind of go through these demonstrations and trials, then you can sit down with the patient and really they can make an informed decision on what they want to use, and then you can talk about, well, how are we going to implement this? In the VA, we use contractors to actually go do a home installation, but if it's something simple, then maybe the patient's family can help set it up. Or if you're in private practice, you could go out and set it up yourself. This is another, the map that I kind of like, but mounting, access, and power. These are just some, we've kind of talked about the clinical side, but these are just some logistics that are important to think about to really make sure you get a good implementation. But you're integrating a lot of different things in someone's home potentially, and if you think about mounting and you think about access and you think about power, that covers a lot of bases of details that not as clinical, the access piece is, but really just they are, you know, if you don't get these right, then things don't work well. So do you need, you know, movable mounts? That's something I always think about. Or is the device going to be moved from one place to another and you're going to have multiple mounting locations? For access, does the patient want to be able to access this system all the time without any help? Or is it okay if someone, you know, puts a microphone in front of them or puts a switch in their hand? And then cable management is really huge, and sometimes you have a lot of cables, sometimes you don't, but when you do, it's really important to make sure cables aren't getting pulled or crushed or kinked. The better they are organized, the longer it's going to last, and the less headaches your patient and you are going to have. So I really do think that is thinking about MAP can help ensure success. All right, so I'm going to kind of run through a ton of different devices, and as I said in the beginning, this is a very moving target. So some of the slides have some devices that you can still buy but aren't made anymore, and then I'm sure in a week there will be new devices that aren't on here. And I certainly have not covered everything that's out there because that would take years to talk about, but these are devices I've had personal experience with. It's grouped into AT products, and what I mean by that is products that are designed specifically for the AT or the population that uses AT. And that's what I consider traditional EADLs. But we're going to talk about landline access, integration with wheelchairs and communication devices, and then home automation products, which I would also call that consumer electronics. And that's broken down, or I like to break that down into standalone devices and professional, home controllers. So speaking of assistive technology products, so those are, like I mentioned, they're intended for a very specific population. So the companies that are making these aren't making tons because it's not for the general population, but they have really good alternative access methods, and they're very customizable, great auditory and visual feedback. If it's an app, it's intended for alternative access, so scanning is probably built in. Oftentimes, the technology can be dated. It certainly can be expensive, and there's not always local vendors who know how to do an install or are comfortable with the systems. So I'm going to talk about some of these devices, but these don't really fit necessarily with assist. These are really consumer products, but just for the sake of organizing to access methods, I put it here. But there's lots of remotes. If your patient can actually press the buttons on a remote, but maybe they can't lift their arm to reach a light switch, there's lots of remotes out there that they can use. And like the one on the right is from Lowe's or Home Depot, and it's like $20, and it can turn on and off three different lights. There's lots of options out there. But kind of getting back to assistive technology devices, for the remotes on the previous slide were direct access. But if you're doing indirect access and doing switch scanning, the Relax 2 actually isn't being made anymore. It's now called the Relax, and it looks a little different, and it can't control as many devices, but it works the same. But it's switch input, and you do have visual and auditory feedback, but it's very limited visual and auditory feedback. It's just an LED that's turning on and off and a beep. So you have to see this and able to use it, but it's essentially a universal remote control. So it can learn commands from different IR devices like a TV or a Blu-ray player. And it is battery powered. And you can do some other stuff if you buy other, like an IR to X10 or Insteon converter, then it would allow you to turn on and off things like lights. The Sage Technologies Pocket Mate is similar. It has a little bit better visual feedback in the form of text. But it basically does the same thing. It's a universal remote control. And they actually have a version of it that does, I forget the name, but that does voice control. So a little bit more complex is the Primo. It has a screen that's a touch screen that you can configure icons on. If you can't use a touch screen, you can do switch scanning. It does do auditory and visual feedback, but just like the previous two, you have to be able to see it. It also comes out of the box where it can interface to the Cero phone, which is an IR phone. I'll show you later, so you can do telephone access. The other devices can do the same thing with the Cero phone, but they might require a little bit more setup. And this is also battery powered, so it mounts nicely on a bed or a wheelchair. The Pilot One is this slide is covering voice controlled devices, and the Pilot One is is a type that I don't use it that much, but it's got switch as a backup, which is, as I mentioned in the beginning, is really important. So you can do switch scanning. It does auditory feedback, and it does really good auditory feedback because it actually reads off the different things you like light or television, so that you don't have to see the device if you're doing switch scanning and you can't see it. But the voice control is trained to your voice, and so that can cause problems. If someone's voice changes throughout the day, it may work in the beginning of the day, or it may not work, or it may not work in the end of the day if their voice gets lower. And again, this is kind of a universal remote control. It can do IR, but it can also, with some adapters, do things like lights. Voice IR is similar. It's pretty simple. It's voice controlled, and it is trained to your voice. You have two commands. You like a television and then channel up, and you have to say television every time you do a command. The voice recognition algorithm is not that great, but it is pretty inexpensive for this field, and can work well. So Quartet Simplicity is kind of, I like to call it Old Faithful because it's been around forever and it's built like a tank, but it can do voice access and switch control, and it just has a ton of features. It is dated, like it still has VCR on the menu, which is weird, but you can kind of, if a user is willing to call things different, call your VCR, or say VCR but mean Blu-ray, you can do most things. Although, it starts getting tricky if you're navigating like a cable box menu where you're doing up and down and left and right and enter. It doesn't have all those commands perfectly, but it is, like the others, a universal remote. It does IR. It actually has built-in ability to do X10 or Insteon, which are power line things, or power line interface to control things like lights. I use it a lot of times in the hospital because it is very bulletproof. The voice control on it is dated, and it is trained to your voice, but the microphone that they use, it's very sensitive to when you're close to it, so it works good in a noisy environment, whereas most other voice recognition systems have trouble in a noisy environment. And then it has a built-in telephone, so it's kind of all in one. You don't have to have a separate telephone. The Sage Roommate is similar in that it does voice control and switch as an option and backup. It's different, though. It's not trained to the user's voice, so it works with anybody, which is nice. But you have to hit a switch to initiate a voice command. So every time you want to change your channel or turn on a light, you have to hit a switch. But it's only one command. Whereas with the Quartet, you have to say, you actually wake it up with a name. So the one I have here, I call it How. So I have to say How, and then television, and then channel, and then up. But once I'm there, I can just say up and down as much as I want while I'm channel surfing. So there's little pros and cons like that that I like to describe to patients, because that really, they may like one way or the other. So there's a lot of computer-based EADLs coming out now. Many of them are based on the SmartBox Grid software, and others have the proprietary software. But most of them are... the ones I'm going to talk about are all based on a Windows tablet. So that opens up a lot of options, and especially with the Grid software, you can do switch access, touchscreen access, voice control. You can use any computer access method you want, like head mouse or eye tracking. So that's really nice from an access point. And really, audio and visual feedback is, you can do whatever you want. You know, you can have it read out commands like the pilot I mentioned for auditory feedback when you're not looking at it, but you can also do... magnifier, so the screen enlarges for people with low vision. There's really a lot of options. In addition to that, because it's a computer, it opens up some different things, like it can function as a communication device, or it can function for doing computer access, to do things like games or e-books. And additionally, because it's a computer, most of the companies that sell these will remote into your device to provide technical support if you have internet access, which is really nice. You know, one of the drawbacks is that it is Windows, and if you've used Windows for any length of time, you know that it can lock up at times, and that's not a good thing when you're talking about an EADL. And then if you are using it on the internet, you are susceptible to viruses and things like that. So that's something I really think patients should know before selecting a device. So a couple examples, and these are ones I've used, but there are others out there. The Surface from Zygo, Break Boundaries Reach, and the ASI Autonomy. They're all a little bit different. The Reach in particular has its own proprietary software, but for voice recognition, they either use the built-in Microsoft voice recognition or Dragon. Dragon tends to be better in my experience when someone really has a low voice or maybe slurs their words, whereas Microsoft works just as well for just the normal voice. But both of them can be trained to the user, and there's just different options. And these are typically pretty similar in price to the traditional systems like the Quartet. They're all in the, $5,000 to $10,000 range. So just kind of stepping back from these really complex systems, there's also just phone access. So if someone wants to access landline phones, which we still have people who want to do that, there's been a lot of options that have come and gone in the last 5 years, especially in the voice access area. But the Ablephone 5000, and this is, it's under different names. I think the company's out of Israel, so there's a couple different distributors in the U.S., but it's a voice-controlled dialer, and it works pretty well. You basically just train it to your voice, and when you pick up the phone or turn on the speakerphone, it says name to dial, and then you say what name you want it to dial. Ablephone also makes a switch-accessible phone, which basically is you hit a switch, and it picks up the phone. So if you combine that with the voice dialer, you have not quite hands-free. You have to hit a button, but almost hands-free access to the phone. The Seraphone, which I mentioned earlier with the Pilot and the Primo, but it's an infrared-controlled phone. And it also has some interesting kind of communication device features like pre-made messages that say, you know, I'm using a communication device, so I speak slowly, please be patient, things like that. But it can be really be used with anything that can control IR devices. The Talk IR is similar to the Seraphone. It doesn't have any of the extra features. It's just basically a conference room phone that can be controlled by IR. And then the RCX1000 is a switch accessible phone, and it actually does switch scanning. So you hit the button and it starts scanning through your speed dial list. So there's not a lot of visual or auditory feedback, but it's pretty basic. Some people like that. It also has a remote that you can plug a switch into, so you don't have to be right on the phone. There used to be a bunch of options, like I said, that have come out that were, some of them were really nice, and for whatever reason, they've gone away. So for door access, there's lots of different things out there, but just for this slide, Open Sesame is one of the door openers we use a lot, and I mentioned it earlier, but I really like it has a battery backup. But we've had good success with those. But so if somebody wants to open a door, in the VA we justify that by it's a safety thing, so maybe letting in caregivers or if giving access to a door so that if someone needs to exit their house in an emergency, they can do that independently. So we'll typically put it on a door. If someone's using a wheelchair, a power wheelchair, we'll put it on a door that has a ramp so that in the event of emergency, they'd open the door, go down the ramp, and be able to exit the house safely and independently. So communication devices, and I kind of touched on this, they can, any of the complex ones can function as ECUs or EADLs. So almost all of them have built-in IR or it's an option to control different things like TVs. But a lot of the newer ones, especially, well, really all of the newer ones are have options to do things like Z-Wave or Zigbee control to do things like lights and other home automation products. Also wheelchairs, and this has been around for a while, but it's getting better and better and better all the time, but all the big manufacturers of power wheelchairs, or at least complex rehab wheelchairs, have controllers that can do at least IR, so you can control things like TVs, but also, you know, Bluetooth and mouse control, a Bluetooth switch for phones and mouse for computers control can be really beneficial if you're accessing, you know, like a Windows-based EADL. So kind of moving to mobile devices, I like this because, and this was back in 2012 even, if you look at this, 9% of people are using their phones for actually a phone, and then everything else is you know, internet is the biggest. So it's really interesting. So, you know, we can leverage that for EADLs. So mobile devices, you know, they can do anything, any of the assistive technology devices to do, like communication, environmental control, or even be a cognitive aid. The difference is that it gets a little more clunky when you get into access and changing feedback options. They typically aren't as flexible, although that's getting better all the time. So using one of, you know, a mobile device as our EADL most of the time requires Wi-Fi and internet access, and it differs how, you know, the idiosyncrasies of the system differs between what device you're using. I really focus on just Apple and Android phones, but you can certainly do plenty with Microsoft phones as well. So, you know, why would you use a mobile device as an EADL? Probably the two biggest things I see is that it's it can be very cost effective, and then it's kind of a social aspect of everyone has a cell phone or a tablet that's not like an AT device. So a lot of our younger patients really like that. It's not something extra that they're carrying around that people are going to wonder what that is. So that's kind of my target person, or I think of this using mobile devices when I have a young person who likes to use their cell phone or their tablet, and I start thinking, well, maybe this is where we can go with the ADLs. But, you know, there are lots of access options, and like I said, it's always getting better. Apple has really robust and powerful switch scanning interface. It's very daunting or intimidating for people to learn it. But, you know, when you have somebody who maybe doesn't like cell phones or technology or doesn't have internet access or isn't used to just interacting with a touch interface or can't interact with the touch interface, then you have to start thinking about whether or not it's the right option. So I kind of broke this down. So using an app on your mobile device to control things, there are standalone interfaces. So that's some electronic product that can control maybe one or two things. Like, so maybe it's something that just can turn on and off lights. So these are typically pretty cheap. You can buy them in lots of different places, Amazon, Staples, Lowe's. A lot of times they're very easy to install. And a lot of them can be controlled by bigger home automation systems. Now, the biggest drawback is that if you're trying to control a lot of different things, like you might have an app for controlling your lights, an app for controlling your TV, and then an app for your thermostat. That's a lot of apps, and it kind of can be clunky. Some people might like that, and certainly an option, but typically that's not the best. Additionally, if you're using all these apps, you have to think about access. So if your patient can't access the touchscreen and you're doing alternative access, do the apps, are they compatible with like Apple's switch control? The other piece is who's going to do the install. In the VA, we like to use a contractor because to go do the home installation so that there's someone to provide support after the fact. But if outside the VA, you know, you might have a family member do the install or pay an outside vendor as well. But with these devices, you know, they're consumer devices, so it's hard to know who is able or willing to do the install. But so some examples of these devices is, door locks. So these are Bluetooth or Wi-Fi or Z-Wave, Zigbee. Those are all different Wi-Fi standards for, you know, to control a door lock. So just a deadbolt. You can interface these to the open. Actually, I'll touch on that later. But you can also control your garage door. LiftMaster and a couple other companies are making that. There's lots of different security cameras you can use. And let me actually back up. I think the importance of security cameras is if you're giving someone access to open their door or just unlock their door, it's really nice for them to be able to see who's there. So having a camera or an intercom, and a camera is ideal. And if I can really do it, I would like to have a camera and an intercom, but it can become pricey. But having that really makes it safe so they're not letting in someone they don't know. But there's also a thermostat, like the Nest. And then there's lots and lots of different ways to control lights. Belkin Wemo is one there where you just plug in a module into the wall and then plug your light into that. But there's also lots of different actual light bulbs you can plug in, like the Hue, and Wemo is also making that. So IR is, you know, for controlling TV is very popular. The Logitech Harmony Hub is something we use a lot of. Blumo is a newer product that I actually just got, but I haven't used it a ton. That is also looking very promising for IR control. But again, all of these things have separate apps. And then there's lots of devices that you buy, like a Samsung. A lot of the newer Samsung TVs have, you know, you can control them from an app, and certainly cable boxes and home theater systems are doing that often as well. Some hospital beds, I've never actually used one of these, but Linac apparently makes a interface that can control a hospital bed from a phone. And then certainly there's consumer beds out there that use Bluetooth to control the bed functions like head and foot. So those are all kind of standalone devices. Now, thinking of more home controllers, so these are things that are whole house home automation systems that are meant to control many things. So they are competitively priced when it comes to the comparable assistive technology products. They are typically more expensive than the standalone devices, but they have the ability to do more. One nice thing is that one app does typically control everything, and you can even integrate a lot of the standalone devices into that app. They can be easy to install, and there are professional ones which we'll touch on the next slide. But really, it's the same things we run into before. The apps have limited accessibility features. Some of them even require a subscription fee, and then there are some issues when you want to do IR. Although, I feel like I say that a lot, but although that's constantly changing. So, in the realm of home controllers, there's do-it-yourself and there's professional installed systems. So do-it-yourself is almost always less expensive. There is the question of who's going to do the installation if your patient doesn't have family that can do it, and additionally, who's going to support it? You know, are you going to support it, or is someone, you know, is the are they going to have to call, you know, Amazon Echo tech support? Apps, it's just hit or miss. Some of the apps are great, some of the apps aren't. It just all depends on who it is. It's nice you can purchase them at, you know, places like Lowe's and Best Buy. And sometimes IR, like some of them don't do IR, which can be a problem since TV is a pretty popular control option. The professional systems can be or much more expensive than do-it-yourself, but less expensive than the assistive tech. So still pretty cost competitive with the assistive technology systems. You get a really good install typically because you are having this install done. And then you have a company that is going to provide training and support. And then a lot of, at least the systems we use, the apps have been around for a while and are pretty well developed. So this is a nice, I'm really doing a lot of these professional systems because it kind of bridges the gap between assistive technology products and the do-it-yourself home automation products. But it all depends on, in the VA, we can fund these things, so it's a little bit different in the outside world if you have to worry about cost. So home controllers, some do-it-yourself ones. SmartThings has been around for a while, and it's pretty inexpensive. It can do voice control with the addition of, I have Shortcut and Ivy on this slide, but Ivy currently is, it says it's supposed to be available, but it's not right now. They changed. But Amazon Echo, actually, and this applies, Amazon Echo pretty much works with all of the things I'm going to talk about. But it gets on your Wi-Fi network and communicates to your phone, and it can control, you know, everything from lights and doors. And it doesn't do IR. You have to buy an additional thing like the Blumo or the Logitech Harmony actually interfaces to the SmartThings, although it's a little bit clunky. The Iris from Lowe's is nice. It's the same price, does all the same things, does work with Amazon Echo. And you can even pay like a service fee to have voice access and to have some extra features. Like they do have some kind of, they're actually gearing it towards the elderly population to kind of monitor, like, well, is my dad not been moving around today? And then it'll send you like a text alert about things like that. But that's a fee service we have to pay monthly. The nice thing about Iris is Lowe's, you can pay Lowe's to do an actual professional install instead of just doing it yourself. Amazon Echo, it's hard to know where to put it. I'm sure everyone has heard lots about the Echo and may even have one. They really were pricing them very competitively over the holiday season. But you know, it's really a voice control, and Google Home is very similar. It's I don't have as much experience with it, but you know, it's voice control for your home, and so it does all the things that Siri would do on an iPhone, but it does a lot more. And what is really promising about the Echo in particular is that Amazon has worked really hard to integrate into a lot of different home automation systems, so it works with almost everything. So, and the voice access or voice recognition is really good. The one thing I will say about the Amazon Echo is that in a loud environment, like, so I had a patient last week that very hard of hearing. So when he turns the TV on, it is loud. Echo could not function in that environment. It just could not hear him once the TV was on. The last thing about Google Home or Echo is they aren't actually home controllers. I put them here because it's hard to know where. They interface through your Wi-Fi to other things, like a home controller, like the Echo interfacing with Iris, or the Echo interfacing with one of the standalone devices like your Nest thermostat. So it, you know, it is like you have to buy multiple components to do that. So professional installed examples, Control4 by far is what we use the most. It's not the newest or the fanciest home automation system, but it works really well. And I would bet money that almost in any town, however small it is, within a 50-mile radius, there is a home theater company that also is a distributor for Control4. They're very prolific. I mean, I haven't found a place that doesn't have somebody close by. It can do voice control through Amazon Echo, but with Echo, and this applies to everything that Echo is controlled, a lot of it is pretty new and it doesn't have full functionality. As an example, with Control4, you can use Echo to do lots of things, but the TV control is a little bit, it's not quite there yet. You can do neat things like a macro where you turn on, you say, turn on HBO, and it'll turn on your TV, it'll turn on your stereo, turn on your cable box, make sure the TV's on the right input, and then change the channel to HBO. But to turn it to change the channel up one or change the volume, it can't do that. Now, that's just right now. It used to be the same way for the Logitech Harmony, which is an IR interface that I mentioned with Blumo and the standalone devices. But those have already changed. Like those actually have more functionality now with Echo. So all of this is in flux. So I do think that they're viable options. And the nice thing about using these is that when they get upgraded, it's probably just a software update. And so you don't have to replace the system. You just update them, and now you have better voice control. And, you know, these installations, depending upon how much you do, can be pretty inexpensive, or at least the entry level is pretty low for having something professionally installed, specifically compared to assistive technology products. However, Access, you know, the voice control, like I mentioned, isn't as good. Switch Access isn't as good as the assistive technology products. So you really have to think about the patient when you're looking at these different systems to decide what's going to be best for them. You know, additionally, a lot of cable companies and home security companies do home automation, but most of them require a fee to do that. I haven't actually recommended this for anyone because I don't like subscription fees for things like this. But more and more products like DirecTV and Apple are including voice access in their apps, so someone can use voice access. There is some functionality there. But the problem is it's, and this is the same problem for, like, say, doing telephone access on your cell phone. Even though you have voice access, it's not intended to be hands-free voice access. So, like, on your telephone, if you want to make a call, that's great. You start up the voice access by saying, "Hey, Siri," on an Apple phone, and then you say, "Call Mom." If you want to hang up once you've called, you're out of luck. So little details like that play into this. So that's why it can kind of get complicated. So how do you pick? And I mean, we've hit on this over and over, but how do you pick the right solution? And there's not necessarily an easy answer, but I would say the short answer is that it just depends on your user. You know, you have to match their abilities, their access, with an access method, and you have to match what they want to control with different devices. And I really am a fan of identifying a champion or kind of the guru for whatever system you get. So that could be a family member, it could be a caregiver, but I think that really helps prevent the system not being used. So the long answer, and I apologize if this isn't organized super well, but I'm basically just going to hit a bunch of different things to think about. So, you know, how do they currently access their environment? You know, that can be big in helping you understand where you need to go. You know, what do they want to control? Where will it be used? Really assessing the access method relative to their abilities. Do they have a mobile device? And if they do, what type is it? You know, is it just a dial phone or is it a smartphone? How do they use it and how motivated are they to use it? And that's a big piece, motivation. Do they have Wi-Fi and internet at home? We run into that all the time with patients in rural areas not having a good internet connection. And then, like I said about the champion, you know, is there someone in their life that is willing to really, that is motivated to really be part of this EADL process? So assistive technology products, I think, are best used when you really need a very customized user interface. Whether or not that's the access method or the feedback, those devices are going to have the most flexibility. The standalone consumer electronic products are, you know, if someone just wants to turn on and off a light or they want to unlock their front door, maybe that's the right way to go. The home controllers are when someone wants to control a lot of things in their house, and maybe they don't like the assistive technology products that can do that. Maybe they have a cell phone and that's all they want to use. But that's a lot of times when you go in that direction. And then do-it-yourself versus professional home controllers, that really just depends on the situation of the patient. Do they have family members? You know, maybe they have a daughter or a son that is a tech guru and wants to install all this stuff. That can be a really cost-effective way to do it. So, you know, I am a big fan of using consumer products because it is very cost-effective and you get the latest in technology. And some of the neat things are, you know, they can just be so much more integrated. You can a lot of times control things when you're not physically in the area, which I guess that can be good and bad. And then, you know, for voice control, I do think the consumer products, especially if they're using Microsoft or Dragon voice recognition, you know, you don't get better voice control than that. And the same is true for the Amazon Echo. So they really lead compared to some of the assistive technology products in those areas. However, it really is the Wild West of home automation. And you know, I actually put that bullet on a presentation 4 years ago, and it's only worse now. I can't tell you how many products I've purchased to have for demonstrations that are now no longer made. So you have to be careful what you pick, and I kind of like to stick with the big name companies. You know, like I feel like Amazon's pretty invested in their Echo. I feel like Logitech is very invested in their Harmony products. So those will probably be around for a while. Certainly, the access methods are constantly maturing and getting better, both in voice and switch access. You know, the only thing is when you start doing these things, like, so let's take the example of the Amazon Echo controlling SmartThings, then controlling Logitech Harmony. I don't think you actually have to do it that way now, but 6 months ago, that is the way you would have to control if you wanted to do IR control. Through the Amazon Echo, or at least it was one of the ways to do it. You have three or four different companies' products talking to each other, and they're not just talking directly. They're actually going up into the cloud, you know, through the internet, talking to your different accounts for those companies, and then coming back to your house and turning on the lights. So a lot's going on behind the scenes, which is pretty cool from a technology standpoint. But, you know, as we all know, things don't always work. So that can be a major problem for these products. So like things like scanning and voice access aren't always as streamlined because, again, they're intended for the general population, so they're not putting in those little details that help when you can't physically touch your device. The other problem is if you don't have family members or you're not doing the installation for the patient, you know, who's going to do it? And finding people to do consumer products, I used to not have anybody to do that. There are companies out there that's all they do is install things like the Nest thermostat or helping people set up their Amazon Echo. So that is a market niche that you can use. And then what's great is then they can provide support if you're not providing that support. So just a few examples, and these are all based on actual patients we've worked with, but so this is using a mobile device. Now, this patient, in my opinion, kind of is a great example of who is a good candidate for consumer electronics. So he's a 30-year-old male with a spinal cord injury. He lives in his own home alone and has a power wheelchair. He uses an Android cell phone for telephone access and email, and he does it with touch access. So this particular guy uses his knuckles to access the touchscreen. And really all he wanted to do was be able to unlock his front door or lock his front door and then control his thermostat, because both of those things were really difficult. He couldn't reach the thermostat because he really didn't have that gross motor to lift his upper extremities up. And the TV remotes, he felt like he could hit those pretty easily. So, you know, the questions we were thinking about, well, what do we go with? And like I said, he was a perfect example of somebody who would be good for these consumer electronic products, because he actually said, hey, I don't want anything extra. I just want to use my phone. So then we had to decide, well, do we just get a standalone or a do-it-yourself products, or which certainly would have worked, or do we get a professional install? So in this case, we went with the professional install for some of the reasons I've mentioned, having that support. And it kind of worked out pretty neat. We were able to get one of our local home automation and home theater companies talking to one of our AT companies, and they actually worked together on this install to make sure the patient got what he needed. And so this was a Control 4 system that was installed. You can see on the previous slide, it has a pretty simple interface with icons on the screen. That worked so well that we actually go straight to the home automation company now. They don't. We've almost converted one of their sales reps to being an AT vendor for us of consumer electronics. So it's worked out really well. So I encourage you to reach out if you are interested in that to companies around you. So another example, and this is simple, as an inpatient in our hospital, you see on the left screen the three arrows. This patient, he has spinal cord injury, and he's using three different SIM puffs to control his nurse call, his TV, and a telephone. So you imagine if you can't move around a whole lot, and you basically have to have these three SIM puffs in your mouth, and then every 2 hours you're being rotated, and in between that people are coming in and having to move these things out of the way to do treatments. It's really frustrating, one, to have those things in your mouth, and two, for the caregivers to have to reposition these things, and it's not easy. So what we did was use, in this case, it was a Primo, and used one sip and puff to do switch access. So then just one straw has to be repositioned. Additionally, what we did was mount everything on this arm for the TV so that can be easily swung out of the way. So that was really for caregivers, not so much for the patient. We didn't give him a whole lot of extra functionality, but we did help with the quality of life, I think, for him and the caregivers. So this is kind of an example just comparing, and this actually isn't with a real patient. This is comparing traditional or assistive technology solutions with mobile device solutions. So this is really just to show you that there is a cost difference, and that's something that to be thought about. So we have a patient, he has good vision, limited motor in his upper extremities, but he wants to access his lights, TV, and a landline, and he does well with switch scanning with some visual and auditory feedback. So what can we use with him in the traditional AT and mobile device worlds? So here, now these costs might be a little bit off, and actually the picture on the left is covering up our numbers a little bit, but that if we went with the traditional system, one option would be the Primo. So that's anywhere, you know, it's above $2,000. I'm not exactly sure of today's price. But you buy a Primo, you buy a couple switches, you buy the Cero phone, which is not cheap, and then you buy some lighting modules. So that gets you into the $4,000 range. It's pretty typical for, you know, just forget the brands. That's pretty typical of assistive technology systems to do these things. Now, with a mobile device, so let's say the patient already has an iPhone. You buy a Blue 2, or there's lots of different versions of this from other companies, but it's basically a switch interface with switches on it, two switches that will connect to an iPhone, and you can use the iPhone's built-in switch control access method. So you get a Bluetooth, you get a Logitech Harmony Hub, and you get some Wemo light modules. So now you're in the $400 range, so you're an order of magnitude less expensive. Now, if you had to buy the phone or the tablet, you know, it can add another, you know, $500 to $1,000, you're still considerably cheaper. So when someone is self-purchasing these things, that is a really good option. However, you know, like I've mentioned before, there are, you know, the switch scanning on a Primo is a lot simpler than it is on an iPhone or on an iOS device. But there is a cost difference, so it's something to take note of and to let the patient know. Hopefully we'll have some reference guides available for you to download. Just the initial intention was to give a big overview or a high overview of all of the different devices that are out there, both in the consumer world and the AT world. As it turns out, there's a lot of information there, so I don't know how quick these guides are. However, they can be helpful just to get an idea of what's out there. All right, so that about wraps it up. I feel like I've covered a lot of information, so if there's any questions, please let me know.